Father Bob Warren of the Franciscan Friars of the Atonement. Thank you for listening to this rebroadcast of the Ave Maria Hour radio show. The Friars' popular Ave Maria Hour was first brought to the radio airwaves in 1939, recorded in New York City and on the mountainside grounds at Graymore, a home in Garrison, New York. These timeless classic stories of the Bible and the lives of the saints came to life each week through dramatic reenactment by professional actors and actresses. You know, friends, Christ once said, "Do not hide your treasure under a bushel." In saying this, he meant, share your gifts, share your talents. The Friars of the Atonement feel the message in these broadcasts remains as powerful and timely as when they were originally aired, and we are so happy to be able to share them with you today. To learn more about the missions and ministries of the Friars of the Atonement, I invite you to visit our website, www.atonementfriars.org. In the meantime, sit back and enjoy this rebroadcast of the Ave Maria Hour.
St. Joan de l'Estonac.
Mother, you're mad.
No, my son, I am not mad, but I soon shall be if I do not find peace.
In a convent?
In a convent. Where else can I hope to come so close to God?
But at your age, to become a novice at 47.
If they will have me.
And of all places, why Le Foyan? Why must you shut yourself away in Le Foyan?
Because I must. I must go to Le Foyan.
And go she did, in spite of anything I could say. This beautiful woman, my mother, related by blood or marriage to the royal houses of Navarre, of France, of Aragon, this cultivated, intelligent woman, widow of one of Bordeaux's most distinguished men, this doting mother of four children, wished to immure herself for life in Le Foyan. I made the trip with her to Toulouse, and I sat quietly in a corner, concealing my dismay, while my mother talked to the prioress of Le Foyan.
But why a Cistercian convent, Madame de Montferrand? And why Le Foyan?
Because I need a life of prayer and austerity, Mother de Bediche.
There is nothing to keep you from prayer if you stay home with your children, is there?
No.
How many children do you have?
Four, Mother de Bediche. You have just met my son. I have three daughters.
All grown?
Two are nuns. The other, the youngest child, perhaps she will become a nun too.
Never. Never. She will never do that.
Gaston, you object to the life of a convent, do you, young man?
Well, it's all right for some women, I'm sure of that. But for some, I suppose it's the only possible life. Not for my younger sister, and not for my mother.
Forgive him, Mother de Bediche. He does not understand.
I think he understands very well, Madame de Montferrand. Very well for a young man. Are you married, Gaston?
No, but I soon shall be.
And your young sister?
She's nearly 20. Someone should be trying to find a husband for her.
You think your mother should be conducting the search?
Yes, I do. She has a beautiful chateau near Bordeaux. I think she should live there. My sister would live with her until she marries. When I myself am married, my wife and I could spend time with her. There would be grandchildren, God willing.
I find it interesting to listen to young people make plans for their parents. Well, Madame de Montferrand, it does seem a peaceful way to live out your days on earth.
Of course it is.
Silence, young man. Let your mother speak. Well, Madame, what do you say?
Mother de Bediche, I have thought. I have thought what it means to leave my children, to seek my own salvation. I have thought of what it means to turn from those I love and try to find my own way. I know how selfish it is. I know how cruel and heartless it is to center all one's feelings on oneself. I know all these things. I have said them over and over to myself, but oh, Mother de Bedicia, the time has come when I... Oh, Mother, Mother.
Yes, my child.
It is 25 years, Mother, since my husband died. 25 years. I was 17 when I married. 22 when I was widowed. I loved my husband and he loved me. I love my children. I have raised them to be good Christians. But now I must have a life of my own. I must, or I shall go mad.
I understand. I am only uncertain that you understand.
Understand what, Mother?
We live by the strict observance here at Les Feuillons.
I know.
Most Cistercian convents live by the common observance.
No, but that is not what I want.
It is an easier life.
I do not want an easier life. I want a life that demands everything of me and more.
You will find that the strict observance comes close to doing that.
You will take me? Do you mean that you will take me, Mother?
We will take you.
As a novice?
As a novice.
Thank you. Thank you, Mother.
For a probationary period. Shall we say 6 months?
Thank you. Oh, Mother, thank you, thank you. You will see. I shall become a good Cistercian nun. I shall never leave Les Feuillons, you'll see.
I left my mother at Les Feuillons and returned to Bordeaux, where I took up the management of our estates. At the same time, I was finishing my studies with the Jesuits, so my life was full of responsibilities. But I did not forget my mother. I wrote to her every week. I never received an answer. Twice I made the journey to Toulouse to see her. Both times she sent word that she was content as she was and had no wish to talk to me. I had despaired of seeing my beloved mother again in this world. When, almost precisely 6 months after I had left her at Les Feuillons, I received a message from Mother de Bedicia urging me to come to the convent.
Your mother is ill, young man, gravely ill.
What is it? What is the trouble?
The trouble is that your mother has neither the youth nor the stamina for the life here.
Well, she's not... The illness is not...
Fatal? It will be if she persists. I warned her that the strict observance is not an easy rule to live by.
Yes, I heard you tell her.
Even so, she might have been able to master it, hard as it is, if she had been content to do as she was told. The time for sleep, to give you an example, is limited here. We go to bed at 7. We rise again at 1 to say Our Lady's office. That is not an easy thing for any of us. But your mother, God save us, I do not think she ever went to bed at all. I would find her at midnight on her knees, praying, or sitting on the floor, her eyes wide open, meditating.
My poor mother.
That is not all. Many of us fast, as you know, till dinner. It is not obligatory. A plain breakfast is provided for those who do not wish to wait until midday. But your mother never ate breakfast. Never. Not even coffee. And for dinner she ate black bread. Nothing else. And for the collation after Vespers, again black bread. No fruit, no vegetable, no coffee.
How could she live so?
The answer is she could not. Not for long. Last week she fainted. 3 times. During the examination of faults, her mind seemed to wander. She took upon herself the faults of others, faults no one had accused her of, faults we knew she did not have. I became alarmed for her health. I ordered her to eat an egg. The rule is very clear on this point. When a religious is ill, meat and eggs are permitted. Well, such a storm of weeping, of lamentation, of entreaties not to imperil her soul by protecting her health.
But my mother has always been...
Don't worry, my son. Don't worry. I got the egg into her anyway.
You did?
I took her some medicine with a particularly vile and nasty taste. She drank it down like a greedy child. course I didn't tell her I'd beaten a whole raw egg in it beforehand.
Oh, Mother de Bedeche.
But I can't keep up this sort of deception, even if I wanted to. The strict observance is for those who can benefit from it, not for those who wish to use it to destroy themselves.
Do you think that my mother wants to destroy herself?
Why else is she doing more, 50 times more than is required of her? When I asked her to eat the egg, she looked at me with such pitiful eyes and said, "On my deathbed, Mother, on my deathbed I will do as you ask." I thought to myself, "You are on your deathbed now, Madame, if steps are not taken to get you off of it." And so I sent for you, Monsieur.
Oh, what do you want me to do?
Take her away from here.
If she will not go?
She will go. She has been told she must go.
She can't have liked that.
Indeed, she did not. Again, the tears, the sobs, the outcries, the entreaties. Until I was forced to say quite harshly, "Madame, Les Feuillants is not a convenience for suicides."
Mother de Bedeche.
She must leave here at once.
I asked to see my mother. When she entered the room, I scarcely knew her. This was an old woman who shuffled through the door in the long white robes. Her eyes were sunken deep into their sockets, and they looked not at me, but with a desperate intensity at Mother de Bedeche.
"It is time, Mother. I must go now."
"Yes, Joan. Your son has come to take you home."
"You are casting me out."
"It is for the best, Joan, believe me."
"I had thought to end my days here."
"It is not possible, Joan."
"I have tried to do all that God might want."
"God never wanted you to sacrifice your health, Joan."
"God does not want me to stay here."
"Your superiors have decided it is better for you to leave, Joan, and you must trust them."
"I trust in God."
"Then you must trust him to speak through us."
"Mother de Bedeche, one last request."
"What is it, Joan?"
"Do not make me leave today."
"Joan, it has been decided."
"I will leave tomorrow. I promise that I will. My son can be my witness. I will go with him tomorrow and do whatever he says is best. But tonight, just tonight, Mother, let me spend tonight in prayer. I need to ask God to show me what he wishes me to do."
Mother de Bedeche relented, though I could see she was reluctant. But no one, I swear, no one could have resisted that plaintive plea. The plea of a soul in purgatory, wandering, desperate and afraid. And alone, quite alone. I spent the night in Toulouse and returned to the convent early the next morning. Mother de Bedeche received me. "How is she?"
"It was well to let her stay another night."
"I was afraid."
"So was I. Afraid that a night of prayer would be more than she could endure. But it seems to have done her good. You will see how she's improved."
In the cloister, we found my mother walking quietly in the arcade, her lips moving silently, the rosary beads slipping through her fingers. There was a firmness to the way she walked. And when she turned to look at me, her eyes were no longer frightened and staring, but clear and full of light.
"Ah, my son."
"I've come to take you home, Mother."
"Yes. Whatever you say."
"I thought we might go to the country for a while. It's beautiful there now."
"Whatever you say. He's a good boy." Isn't he, Mother de Bedeche?
A very good boy.
Well, he's a man, really. He'll be getting married soon, won't you, my darling?
Yes, as soon as I finish my studies, Mother.
He's a very bright young man, too, Mother.
I'm sure he is.
He's studying with the Jesuits, you know. We all know how intelligent they are. And how strict.
There are two that I'd like you to meet, Mother, when you're feeling well again.
I am well.
Father Raymond and Father Debord.
Well, perhaps they'll come to the chateau now and then. I can get to know them there. Oh, Mother de Bedeche. I hate to say goodbye. You know that.
It is for the best, Joan.
I know that. I know that now.
I'm glad that I could persuade you.
No, no, not you, Mother, not you at all.
No?
No, no, it was God. Last night I prayed that I might not have to leave here. I prayed God that he might spare me the agony of this separation. But as I prayed for God to make it possible for me to have my own selfish, childish way, he spoke to me. So gently. So sweetly, but so firmly. And he made me understand that I was to leave here for a reason. That I would leave here to found a new order for the salvation of souls. And he assured me that I would do this. He even told me the name it would bear. The Congregation of Notre Dame.
I took my mother home. Her health returned completely, and she became more beautiful than ever because of the radiant peace that seemed to shine from her eyes. Even when she was troubled, it never wholly left her. The two Jesuit priests, who were my instructors, Father Raymond and Father Debord, visited often, and my mother liked them both and trusted them.
It was so clear to me that night in the chapel, Father Raymond. God seemed so close. I knew exactly what he wanted me to do.
And now it is not so clear. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Oh, no, no, Father. It's clearer than ever. Father Debord, why do my spiritual directors tell me to forget about the Congregation of Notre Dame? I know it is what God wants me to do, what he intends that I should do.
If you are right, Joan, he will make his intention known.
But he has made it known, Father Debord. That night in the chapel at Les Feuillants.
Mother's patience persevered. She did not question the counsel of her advisors. And as her health improved, her activity increased.
I think I shall go to Périgord for a few days.
Do you want me to go with you, Mother?
No, no need, my boy, no need. I'm quite well now. I heard of two sisters in Périgord who are interested in my idea for a new religious order, and I want to talk to them.
When she returned from Périgord, she had roused the enthusiasm not only of the two sisters, but that of six of their friends. Then, tragedy struck the great city of Bordeaux. The plague.
Joan, you are desperately needed.
The sick are left to die in the streets, madame. Their relatives are afraid to attend to them.
They die like flies, Joan. There is no one to nurse them.
I know how weary you must be. If you could get help.
I will ask the ladies of the countryside, my neighbors. We will all come to Bordeaux.
The hospitals are full, madame. The sick lie on the floor, in the corridors.
Bring them here, Father. We should be able to nurse, 30 at least. More, if necessary. And I will ask the other ladies.
So long as the plague lasted, my mother had little time to dream of the new order she so confidently expected to found. But at last, the dread disease departed from the city. And by then, my mother was quite accustomed to making the journey from the chateau to Bordeaux several times each week.
I spoke with four more ladies today who are most interested in the Congregation of Notre Dame. How much longer, Father Debord, will I have to wait?
Dear madame, are you not content to serve God as you've been doing?
Wonderful work you and your ladies performed during the plague. Who knows how many were saved because of you?
But God has a plan for me, dear fathers. Do you not understand? He has a plan for me.
My mother's health was completely restored. She was busy with works of charity. My sister had become interested in an eligible young man, and I was engaged to be married in the fall. One summer day, I sat with my mother on the green lawn of our country home.
Oh, and is the young man serious with regard to your sister, do you think?
I'm sure he is. But I don't know that she's serious about him.
I hope she is.
Do you mean that, Mother?
Well, of course I mean it.
I thought perhaps you wished your youngest daughter to become a nun like the other two.
I have learned, my son, that there are those who are suited to the cloistered life and those who are not.
You do know now that you are one of those who are not.
It still seems to me the most beautiful life of all, to attain oneness with God, to rest in his love, without fear, without thought, without sensation. Simply to know he is with you. Yes, it is the most beautiful life of all.
But not for you.
No, no, it was not for me. Still, there was my revelation. God did speak to me directly. That one time.
In the chapel at Les Foyers?
Yes, he did speak.
Mother, are you very sure?
Yes, my son, I am very sure. I must simply be patient. Well, now let us talk of other things. Your marriage, now. September? Is that the date you have chosen?
Late September. Look who's coming across the lawn.
It's Father Raymond.
Weren't you expecting him?
I was expecting Father Debord today, but now look at Father Raymond. He's running. I hope there's no bad news from Bordeaux.
If it were bad news, would he be running to tell us?
One never knows. Father Raymond!
Joan!
Sit down, Father. Catch your breath.
I must tell you.
Mother was expecting Father Debord.
A most amazing thing.
Well, then it's not bad news.
Oh, no, no, not at all. Oh, my, I'm not used to hurrying so.
Oh, have some lemonade, Father Raymond.
No. I must tell you what happened this morning. As I was offering the Mass, suddenly, quite suddenly, I'd not been thinking of you at all, Joe. Not then, not at all for the past few days. Well, suddenly, all at once, at the elevation of the host, I had a revelation. It was a most amazing thing. Oh, dear, I think I'll have the lemonade after all.
Oh, here you are, Father. Oh,
thank you. I hurried down here to tell you. Oh, this lemonade is good. Well, now, I assure you it was truly...
Joan!
Father Debord.
Oh, good, I must speak to him about this. It happened so suddenly. I was quite unprepared. Yet it came with such unmistakable clarity. It was a revelation, no doubt about it. None whatsoever.
Father Debord, welcome.
Joan, my dear. Oh, Father Raymond, I'm glad you're here.
And I'm glad you're here, Father Debord.
I must tell you all what happened at Mass this morning. It was a revelation.
You too? This morning?
At the elevation of the host. A revelation. All at once, it was perfectly clear. As though God had spoken aloud. As though I'd heard him say that his will, Joan, is that you should found a new order.
The Congregation of Notre Dame.
And that Father Raymond and I are to help you.
At last.
Father Debord.
I felt I must tell you right away. I know how long you've waited.
Father Debord.
You and I, Father Raymond, are to assist her in founding the new order. Oh, it was clear as the morning air.
Yes, I know. The same revelation manifested itself to me this morning, as I was offering Mass at the elevation of the host. That is why I came here to tell you, to tell you all.
At last it has come to pass. Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you, dear God, thank you.
So God in his own time wrought his will upon this earth through the instrument of this humblest of all his servants, my mother. The first foundation of the Congregation of Notre Dame was established in Perigeux, and soon the whole countryside was dotted with them. My mother was elected the first superior of the Congregation of Notre Dame. Her last years were spent in retirement, preparing for death, which came to her one night just after her nuns had renewed their vows on the Feast of the Purification in the year 1640.